No writers were harmed in the production of this podcast.
I'm Matt Phillips, and this is my writer's dossier.
Today in the interrogation chair, it's Matt Phillips, author of A Good Rush of Blood from Run Amok Books. This is a scorching mystery of criminal conspiracy, street-level justice, and unlikely courage. Matt earned his MFA from the University of Texas in El Paso, and he's also a short filmmaker. You learned about him first in his unredacted dossier. Now, we finally have him here where we have ways of making him talk. Welcome to the Dossier Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Writer's Dossier Podcast. I'm Jeff Circle, your host, and we are here today with my friend, Matt Phillips, author of A Good Rush of Blood by Run Amok Books. This thing is something that you're going to get if you're into crime noir. Matt's been at it a while, and he's got it down. He's got all the bona fides and everything to go with it. So, Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Jeff, thanks for having me on the Writer's Dossier. Very awesome. Love what you're doing, and I am stoked to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, you weren't one of the very first, but your original Writer's Dossier came out over a year and a half ago. So you are in the Veterans Club, my friend.
Yeah, for sure. I love what you're doing with that. It's a really cool way to learn about writers and other professionals in the industry, and loved it. Thought I'd try to get in there, and got lucky and got in.
Well, thank you. Just a side note, this is a little admin note for all the behind-the-scenes stuff. I refreshed and updated your dossier today with a bunch of cool stuff. So everyone run out to the Writer's Dossier. Look up Matt Phillips. You can find out about him, his background, and his fantastic books. Let me get right into the questions here because we keep this quick and short and easy down to commute time for everybody. There's only so much time in the day. So let me ask you, serious question. You and film director Jeremy Goodlander shot a short film titled Rush. It was on an iPhone GS. You posted it on Vimeo, and it premiered at the Polygrind Film Festival in Las Vegas. So I gotta know, was this your Blair Witch phase, or are there other plans to make more films?
That's a really good question. That's a deep cut right there. More than 11 years old or 12 years old. So we made it on an iPhone 3GS. We did some makeup. It's a zombie film, actually. And got into a couple festivals, including that one. Yeah, that's so funny. It was it's definitely a Blair Witch. It's a found footage horror film, about 3 minutes long. We wrote it on the fly based on shots we got in and around the house in the Palm Springs area. And more films, yeah. I mean, I've written a bunch of films, some horror, some crime and noir. I also actually directed another horror short 2 years ago called Customer Service Representative. That premiered at the San Diego Mobile Film Festival. I shot it on another mobile phone.
Dang.
So yeah, I'm always in the works on film projects. For me, a lot of it is about, can I get it done? And if I can get it done, I'm going to try to do it. So yeah, that's so funny. And that is available on Vimeo. It's a really cool film. People should go check it out. Free to watch. Kind of a fun film.
Yeah, it's what, under five minutes?
I think it's 3.5, maybe. Maybe it's under 4. I think you're probably right. Yeah. But you know, I've used that as a reel and for other projects. And I'm really proud of that film. We made it in a couple days for a $0 budget and enlisted friends and family. And it was awesome.
I loved it. Yeah, definitely go out there because at the bottom of your website, you've got some of your socials and there's Vimeo. I'm like, what? Why does he have at first I thought Venmo, what is he collecting money for? But no, people go out to mattphillipswriter.com. That's the website, right?
That's it. And maybe I should put my Venmo on there. That might help.
There you go. I love it. Oh, that's fantastic. Hey, so you said you've written some films and some scripts. Do you actually write full-length screenplays?
Yeah, absolutely. I've written a number of full-length screenplays. I have had a few of them placed in certain festivals around the country. The Tucson Horror Origins Film Festival. I got a honorable mention for a film I wrote called The Eat It All Kids. It's a screenplay. And that's a cannibal coming of age story, by the way, if anybody's interested.
Oh, sure. Yeah, everyday stuff. I'm going to drop that right on the Hallmark channel for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. And then, you know, I've got some, I wrote one last winter called Shotgun Cody. It's about a hitman who gets sick of, you know, doing Uber Eats and decides to be a on-call hitman.
Sure. Yeah. Nice. So a little inside baseball here. Do you use a software program for screenplays like Final Draft, or what are you using?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am a fan of some of the writing software. I like Scrivener, but that is because I write novels, short stories, and screenplays. Also, the cost is right. Yeah, Scrivener
has the screenplay format and everything.
It does. It does. And it's pretty solid. You don't have to modify it, really. Another good one that I've used is from the screenwriter John August. I believe he wrote Big Fish. His is called Highland, H-I-L-A-N-D. That one's really cool as well. Cost is a little more, but it's cool to check out for someone who's interested.
All you screenplay writers out there, there you go. There's some helpful information for you. So moving on, we've discussed the influences of film on books and vice versa. And you've had some experience with both. You've written books and worked on various film projects, as we're talking about. Now, I'm going to quote you from your original dossier interview on August 26, 2023, when you said,
"This episode is brought to you by Winding Road Stories. Winding Road Stories is a traditional and innovative publishing company located in New York City. It was created by writers, for writers, and I can tell you, they really have an author-centric approach in working with their creators. And they don't just take your manuscript and disappear. They work with you to make it the best it can be. I met Winding Road's founding editor, Michael Dolan, a few years ago, and we've been in touch ever since. He's the kind of guy I can text when I have a question, and he always responds with wisdom and insights that I often lack. Winding Road Stories believes that a good story deserves to be shared, and they're looking for stories from all genres right now. They want to help develop your passion project, so look them up. Find them on social media and at windingroadstories.com.
All it takes to write a novel is the will, determination, and a modicum of craftsmanship. Do you still believe that, Matt?
It's so funny the things you respond to in interviews that people bring it back. So, you know, all it takes, that's a lot of stuff, right? It takes a lot of willpower and determination. I think the answer is still yes, but, you know, I do see a lot of people using AI to write now. I think that's going to happen more and more, which really scares me. I think great art can be made with all tools. I don't think that's what I was talking about when I was answering your original question. So I think, you know, if it's not, I guess what I'd say is this: if it's not a great effort, if it's not torturous, if it's not difficult in some meaningful way, you're probably not doing it right. And that will help nobody.
Right there's a clip right there. I love it. That's great stuff. No, that's fantastic. All right, we're going to break some news here. You've written a story, a short story, for a crime thriller anthology that I'm editing. And it has to do with a guy whose face is covered in bandages because he did some bad things and needs some reconstruction. So did writing a character like that make you think of other things someone with facial reconstruction could get away with without saying what this guy did and giving away the plot? And let me ask, do you have any appointments scheduled for yourself?
Well, I do think, you know, with all this facial recognition software out there, as someone who's been in law enforcement yourself, you probably know reconstructive surgery might not be too far off for the rich embezzler. You know, for me, it's kind of funny. I remember I was getting some dental work done a few years back and I needed a crown on the front. And the dentist said, "Okay, well, you're going to do the white." I said, "Just do the silver, man. It'll look good." And he says, "I don't do that." And I said, "Well, I'm not winning any beauty contests." So, you know, if it meant I could win a beauty contest, maybe I'd get some reconstruction. But hey, man, I think there's some great stuff you could do. Remember the movie Face Off? You know, Face Off?
Yes.
Like, well,
Nicholas.
We're
going to
do, yeah, John we should Travolta. Have Face Off 2. Let's do it, you know?
Those films, they were just so over the top. But I got to tell you, Howie Long in fatigues in a Humvee in the desert and just looking at Travolta, he's like, "Yeah, ain't it cool?"
I mean, there's something really enduring. Endearing is the word. Enduring and endearing about those films. Like, why not, you know?
The gold-plated, 1911s or whatever he had, Nicolas Cage. Yeah, total cheese, man. If it's on, I'm stopping.
Yeah, why not? Just watch. You know, have a drink and watch. Not bad at all.
Hey, you're a fan and a practitioner of crime noir in both book and film, as we said. What makes a story noir, in your opinion? Like, do you just see it as dark and sad and helpless? What makes a good noir story?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You probably get a lot of different answers from different people. You know, for me, noir is a main character who's flawed, does things to his or her or their own detriment, makes poor decisions, and has to somehow try to recover, or things keep spiraling. I would think of it as a whirlpool. If I were to say a story is another thing, it would be a whirlpool. That's what noir is to me. It can be dark. It could also be a comedy. I think of The Big Lebowski. That to me isn't a comedy. It's a noir film. Yep.
That came up.
And there are lots of books like that as well. So I think oftentimes in noir, we see characters outside of established institutions, and they give us a perspective on how society is working at large in a way that involves crime or wrongdoing. So that's probably the main elements for me. I do distinguish between that and a really basic, like, hard-boiled story. So a detective from a police force or something. So I do see a difference there, even though they mix and cross mingle so much.
All right. Yeah, I always think Maltese Falcon, you know, Philip Marlowe, all those hard-boiled, you know, cop noir movies, those films from the 40s and 50s. I mean, because MGM was just knocking them out, like one movie every 2 weeks, and it was just on to the next, on to the next. There are threads and all throughout, but when I think of noir, that's always the first thing that comes to my mind, and it's usually black and white.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting to talk about how film commingles with the literary world, because I think in film versus the literary world, noir has a couple different definitions, especially if you look like the academic research. But, you know, the big thing is all those films are about people doing wrong and the consequences of that, and what, you know, discovering some mystery. And so I think that's all part of it. I mean, I'm happy to be as inclusive as we can with noir because, you know, I love a good story. It doesn't have to be dark. It could be a noir in the sunlight.
Absolutely. Well, what are some of your favorite crime noir stories? And I know I'm sticking with film here, but what would you compare to post-World War II noir stories that we have today? I'm thinking of films like Seven, LA Confidential, Fargo, Road to Perdition. And like you even said, The Big Lebowski is technically noir. Mm-hmm, what are some of your favorites?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I write in the old school tradition of someone like Jim Thompson. Stories like Savage Night, The Killer Inside Me, The Nothing Man. These are stories that oftentimes feature people who are scarred by war or veterans or a really difficult societal time like the Great Depression, World War II, of course. And the characters are dealing with flaws in their psyche in a world that they don't quite recognize anymore, or that doesn't recognize them in the way that they are. So I think that is still happening. I mean, we still see that in, you know, even a story like Seven, you know, David Fincher's novel film is about a serial killer who is he's looking at religion and then he's looking at society and saying, none of this makes sense. And so it's about not recognizing who we are and against who we say we are. And then, of course, you have the detectives intermingling with that, the hard-boiled element. So, you know, I think there's a lot of similarities. I think there are obviously contemporary differences with technology and stories. So I remember when cell phones before I was ever a published writer, I was writing short stories. And it's like, how do I integrate cell phones into the story? Because like now it was at a time where they weren't quite integrated with everything. And now they are. So that's fully integrated in all of our stories, which opens up a world of possibility for crime, for wrongdoing, but also for solving crime. And so I think that can be really interesting. You know, it surprises me when you look at literature and film, the problems that artists point out or the challenges or the conflicts, they're kind of the same. Now, it's still the human condition, not being anonymous in a world of anonymity, trying to improve your own life and the conflicts you come up against doing that. So greed, right? Human greed and jealousy. Those things all endure. If anything, they're amplified by today's modern society. So I don't know. That's not a good answer to your question.
No, that's I love it. And you're right. What it boils down to me, I think, is character. And you've got a deep character, and you throw in those elements of greed and selfishness and layer on whatever the environment is, and then a catalyst of some sort that brings out whatever you've chosen to emphasize, whether it's greed or an event, but it's still got to be character, whether it's in print or film. That's it. The elements of the plot support and amplify, I think, the character's response to the plot. And that's what we look for.
Right.
And I don't know. Some people look for an interesting story in a bank job. I mean, those are interesting. And you find some technical details to a societal issue or element or public domain that you're interested in. But that can get old. It's you connect to the people, I think, more than the story and how the people and those characters react to that. And if you can do both well and merge them together and have that perfect blend of character and plot, then we can identify and get into both.
Yeah, sure. You know, and there's some writers who can do that really well, a lot better than others. I just read a book by the old Miami reporter and crime writer, Edna Buchanan. It's called Act of Betrayal. It was a popular novel in the mid to late 90s, but it's about a reporter in Miami who's of Cuban heritage and trying to find out the story of her revolutionary father as she reports on this lost white young white boy story. And so it was a really interesting thing because the story has her discovering her own identity as she's discovering another person's identity. And then it culminates in a hurricane. And so it's kind of like what you're saying, where everything is just amplified. And we start to see how everything that she is amplified in this heightened moment. A really brilliant book by a great writer. So I think that's a good example of what you're saying and also encapsulates kind of my ideas as well, which is really cool.
Cool. All right. Two questions left. We're going to wrap this up. The first chapter of your novel for your MFA program had your professor saying, and again, I quote, because we do our research here in the dossier, we have inside information on everything that's going on out there. He said, "This is good. Keep writing these kinds of stories, Matt." Now, so my question is, did you just walk out of the program right then because you thought you were already doing everything right? I don't need this.
Yeah, I mean, probably should have when you look at the financial aspect of it. No, it's funny because I think the broader context of that story is that I was also at the same time trying to write more literary stories, I would call them. And so really what it did was focus my attention on my craftsmanship to that type of story. And so I was able to say as a writer, this is my medium. This is what I'm going to work on. And so it applied focus is really what happened for me. And so, you know, the MFA is so interesting. It's like I've used it in a professional setting because I work in higher education for my day job. So it's been really beneficial. But you don't need it to be a writer, right? You just need to write. You need to focus on that. And I would say if you find yourself drawn to writing fantasy or horror or whatever it is, crime, pulp, noir, focus on that. That's the stuff you like, right? It's like if you pick up a guitar, you know, I'm going to try to play rock songs because that's what I listen to. I'm not going to try to play Spanish flamenco, right? So, you know.
I was going to say flamenco. We want to see Matt Phillips at San Diego Beach doing flamenco, bringing him in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gypsy not something Kings. You want to see.
Guest starring with the Gypsy Kings, Matt Phillips.
Right. I wish.
Hey, so last question here. You, along with things that you write the Roughneck Dispatch. Tell us what that's about and how do they get it?
Yeah, for sure. Roughneck Dispatch is part of my Substack newsletter portfolio, I guess I'll call it. I update it not as regularly as I should, but essentially what I'm doing is doing a little bit what you're doing with the dossier. I try to interview some writers. I try to shout out some lesser known books coming out or that have come out, like Christine Boyer's Black Mariah came out last October. Great book. Joel Nadecki has a book coming out called The Broken Detective, which is going to be great at the end of this summer. Stuff like that, I try to throw it in either the podcast or the newsletter. And people, you know, you could peruse it, see it in your email, check it out. Nothing I like, delete or click. I'm going to check that writer out and see what it's about.
And so people can follow you on X, Mr. Phil 25 something.
Oh,
like
yeah. It's
that.
At Mr. Phil with two L's 25 on X and Substack as well. You can search my name. It pops up. Matt Phillips or Roughneck Dispatch will pop up as well. Those are really the only two I'm kind of stuck at. Although Goodreads, I check quite regularly. Love to get messages on Goodreads and follow me on there as well. I post about the books I read.
Folks, find everything about Matt Phillips at mattphillipswriter.com. Follow and smash that like button and follow and subscribe to keep up with Matt. He's got some good things coming. And like I said, he's got an amazing story and an anthology that's coming out later this year. So look forward to that. Matt, Thanks for joining us, folks. I'm Jeff Circle. Thanks for listening to the Writer's Dossier. Matt, we will see you soon, brother.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Dossier podcast. Remember, be good and be safe out there. And here is your official Dossier safety brief. Don't subtract from the population. Don't add to the population, unless you're trying. Stay out of the hospital, the newspaper, and jail. If you end up in jail, establish dominance quickly. The Dossier podcast is a production of The Idea Academy.